Welcome to the Business Trend Center podcast, where we talk all about trends and how to use them to grow your business. My name is Manny Turan.
And I'm Adam Hartung.
And we are Spark Partners. To learn about how to grow your business, please go to our website at sparkpartners.com. And for today's episode, Adam, I wanted to dive into some of the muck and the tar and the oil here of the automotive industry, and kind of talk a little bit about how this new massive trend of the electrification of vehicles needs to be at the forefront of both our business minds as well as our investment minds. And, you know, I've got friends on both sides. I have friends that are dinosaurs till they die, driving big diesel pickup trucks that are modified and all that. And I've got friends that are got rid of all their their gas vehicles and now only drive electric. So first of all, Adam, what are your thoughts about this whole mega trend of the electrification of vehicles?
Well, actually, I find that's a really big trend inside the real mega trend, which is environmental awareness. We've talked a lot about demographics in 2021, trying to drive home that this demographic shift, aging of the population, changing of the, you know, browning of America, those sorts of things have implications for everyone, and they have far-reaching implications into all businesses. Well, the second big one that I really think people aren't paying enough attention to is environmental awareness. And that's because it's easy to sort of shrug it off and say, oh, I can't do anything about climate change, or, you know, I don't really understand. That's cute to say, Adam, but really, how does it impact me? Then I think we're going to have three podcasts here. We're going to talk about electrification of the auto fleet today. We'll also talk about environment, social governance in the corporate world and how that has changed investing rates. And then we'll talk about autonomous processes, which are all coming out of this. And the electrification of our auto fleet really isn't because people want an electric car per se. The reality is that people have plenty of opportunities to get from A to B. The issue is they want to start to do it and they think in a way that's more ecologically docile. I mean, that's what they're really looking for. And that wasn't true 10 years ago. You know, it wasn't true that strongly even 5 years ago when we started to have the Prius come along. We kind of viewed a lot of Prius drivers as a little bit kooky with the hybrid car. But today, the reality is that people are very environmentally aware. You know, we go to the grocery store and we carry a bag in. Again, a decade ago, 15 years ago, I would have thought I would never be carrying my own bags into the grocery store. But now I do it all the time. I never take a bag out of, in fact, I don't take a bag out of any store. I take them with me to the Home Depots and the hardware stores and everywhere so I can reuse the bag. So, you know, we're being environmentally aware on a lot of fronts. And one of them is that, hey, when we start up that vehicle, it's a polluter and it pollutes all the way back to where we're drilling holes in the ground that have spills, oil spills, and they pollute the waterways, they pollute creeks, and they pollute land. And then it works its way out through refining processes, and they emit pollutants into the air, and then it gets into our vehicles. And then we drive, start up these internal combustion engines, and they throw out pollutants into the air. Then people are starting to say, hey, I think there's a better way. And we see a better way. It's been over 10 years now since Tesla was started as a car company. And in that 10 years, people have gotten much more comfortable taking a look at what's going on in the electrification world and seeing, hey, wow, I mean, these cars are robust. They last a long time. I see them on the roadways. They're quick. They get me from A to B. And, you know, I'm not sure that I don't like this better because now my fuel costs go away. And so I start to go into the economic analysis after I start realizing that I just feel better and I enjoy the fact that I'm being more environmentally aware.
Well, what's interesting is, again, in this show, we stay very apolitical, and you know, both Adam and I have our own politics that might be slightly different. But the whole idea here is we're talking about a trend, something that's happening, whether your politics are left, right, or in the middle. These things are happening, and that's the reminder that we always have to be aware of is, you know, there was a trend back 110 years ago. When the Model T was coming out and everybody had a horse and buggy in their yard, and people were saying, I'm never going to drive one of those things, or, you know, the devil.
Well, you had to have, Hey, you had to have fuel where the horse just ate on the side of the road. You know, how the buggy was reliable. The Model T would break down. The horse could pull you through the mud and the muck. And Model T's had trouble going if they didn't have good roadways. And there were very few good roadways. Yeah, exactly. So there was a lot of justification for people saying that they just didn't think that that any kind of a motorized vehicle was going to be part of the future. And this is the problem people fall into. They get very comfortable with the status quo. They know the status quo. They know how it works. And they see something new come along, and they reject it. And they find reasons to reject it, just as I listed off the reasons not to own a car. And that is really the mind saying, I'm not ready for the change. I'm not ready to say that the future is going to look different. But the reality is, it's pretty simple to look out there and say that, yeah, the future will be different. I get chastised a lot over the last 25 years in the kind of work we do, Manny. People come at me and say, well, how can you be so certain about something happening in the future? And I always tell them, if you start tracking trends and you see how people are behaving, you can see what's going up and what's going down and how things are going to change. It's no more difficult to do that than it is to do any, you know, to be able to predict lower operating costs of your company if you change your manufacturing process, or lower product costs if you change the components in your product that you sell. All those are predictions you make based upon understanding your business. Then you feel comfortable with cost reductions. You feel comfortable with product performance enhancements. You should feel just as comfortable with the fact that technologies make old products and old technologies obsolete. Things yep. change. We got to get ready to go out there and take advantage of that. And one of the things that was brought to my attention in late 2021 is the Center for Automotive Research, which is acronym CAR, out of Detroit, Michigan, did an analysis of the opportunity for electric vehicles based upon the factoids that the White House was encouraging all manufacturers of automobiles to hit a target of 50% of new car sales in 2030 would be electric. Subsequent to that announcement, the General Motors Company said they would comply when they were going to shoot for that same target, and then BMW said they would shoot for that same target. Now, let's be clear, this is not all vehicles. We're talking about retail sales of light vehicles. So it's passenger cars, pickup trucks. It is not everything that's being sold. And it's being sold at retail, not commercial, not fleet sales. So it's only a part of the market. It's a big part of the market, but it's not the whole market. And so the Center for Automotive Research did their analysis, and they came back and said it's impossible to reach that target. They took a look at the trends in the historical trends in manufacturing of automobiles, and then they said, you know, at best we could hope to get some of these 5% per year improvements. And, you know, changeover rates based on transitions of amongst auto models in the past. And they said the best we could ever do was 30%. So I took that same data, literally took the same data they had. They sent it to me and I ran my own analysis and came back and said that they were completely wrong. And in my opinion, it would be very the likelihood that we would have half of our retail sales be electric vehicles in 2030 was as likely to happen as LeBron James is to make a dunk shot when he's heading down into the lane. I mean, it's just going to happen. It's just absolutely going to happen. It's not even that hard. So let's take a look at why you can look at that stuff. We can look at that stuff, and we can help people see what the other side is going to look like and help them prepare and get advantage and take advantage of this change by getting in front of it. So the adoption rate. Well, how fast would we have to switch, you know, our car buying from internal combustion to electrics? To make that 50% target, I worked the numbers. You have to grow at you have to have the electric vehicles grow at 18.45% per year. Okay, now let's say 18.5, round it off to that. 18.5 sounds like a big number if you're in the car industry, because the auto sales haven't grown at 18.5% per year for a long time. But what we need to do is back up away from looking at it that way and start saying, wait a minute, this is a transition. It's a transition from one technology, internal combustion engine, to another technology, electrification of batteries. So we had a similar transition happen when we went from everybody using a mobile phone to a smartphone. If you remember, there was a time when we all had a smartphone. We all had a mobile phone, and they right. literally were free because you'd go buy a plan from somebody like Sprint or Verizon. You'd pay $20 a month, and they'd give you a phone for free. And then Apple came along. Well, first of all, BlackBerry came along, and BlackBerry started selling a lot of phones into the corporate world. And they said, hey, buy the BlackBerry server, get the BlackBerry phones. And people, the corporations were popping $80, $90, $100 for these phones and going on to the Verizon system generally. That was most popular at the time. And then they were using these BlackBerries with the BlackBerry server. It was substantially more costly than just having a Motorola flip phone, for example. Then the Apple iPhone came along. And when the iPhone came out, people started to really take it seriously because now individuals could buy the product and there were many more apps on the iPhone. But you had to get it from AT&T. They were the only provider. And you had to pay something on the order of $100 to $200 a month for service. And you had to plop down $400 to $600 to buy the phone in the first place. This was just wildly expensive compared to the alternative you had in your hand. I mean, here was a perfectly good mobile phone that did, you know, what do people thought they were good for? Talking. That was what we used them for. And it was nearly free and $20 a month. The cost escalated multiples. But in the 9 years of during which the industry transitioned from mobile phones to smartphones, in 9 years, the transition happened at a rate of 32% per year. The growth rate of mobile phones was 32% per year. Now, did the entire mobile phone business grow by 32%? No, because what happened was people were throwing away the original phones they had, both digital and analog, and they're going to the smartphones. That let smartphones grow at 32% per year. And why did they do that? Well, they took on the cost because they were happier with the results. You know, the development was all happening on a smartphone. More apps were being made. Networks were being improved. Everything was being done to help smartphones be more successful. Meanwhile, nothing was being done to make better ordinary mobile phones, right? That development stopped entirely. So you were stuck with the old technology operating on the old network with the problems that that had in terms of service capability. And so this starts to just go away. Right? It just, the business, the old business goes away while the new business starts to come on. So when I say, well, we're going to transition to the growth rate of 18.45%, I'm saying that's only, you know, a little over half the speed at which we transition to smartphones. And I think that way, it's much more, it starts to become clear that, yeah, this is a very real opportunity.
I think people that are in sort of the have their blinders on regarding this whole emerging trend, fail to see the real implications. And I think if you put them in the seat of an electric car now that drives itself, it's going to change their mind very quickly. If they put you in a car that is much safer than what you have now, it's going to change their mind very quickly.
And, yeah, I mean, you know, the cars are getting better. The motors are getting better. We're investing in motors, batteries, autonomous driving processes. All of that improves the car and lowers the insurance rate of the car. Of course, your fuel costs are zero. Your maintenance costs are nearly zero. You know, all these things keep getting better and better over the next few years. Meanwhile, nobody's doing anything in the internal combustion engine world. They're not making those engines any better, really. Nobody's putting R&D into that. So you're stuck with the old technology. And you know, your fuel costs are going to go up because, you know, we're at peak oil and people are starting to move away from oil production as well as oil consumption. And then what we'll see is the number of charging stations starts to go up at a very, very rapid rate so that you have charging stations that not only at your home, but you'd have them out in the world that you could use. As more charging stations come along, we start what? Closing gas stations. Yeah. Now, you don't need as many gas stations in urban or rural areas as you needed before because there's fewer cars on them. And it's harder to make a, you know, to make that gas station justify its existence or make a payback. So we start closing gas stations. So as you have, see, you're driving down the road, you see more and more charging stations and you see fewer and fewer gas stations. You start scratching your head, you know, like, am I really in the right situation here? Am I going to get stuck at some point where I can't get gas for my vehicle if I'm trying to drive, I don't know, across Arizona, right? And that those factors are already in play. I don't think people realize how many, you know, charging stations we have out there already. The White House goal is to have 500,000 public charging stations. Again, that is another one of those targets. It's only about 18% per year growth. It's in a growing market. That's not a horribly high rate. 30% plus are the big rates. Adoption rates up there, 30% per year, like Netflix, right? Those adoption rates of streaming, that's really high growth. But in a growth market, it's, we're talking about something that could be in range of 16 to 18, 19%. That's a growth market for sure, but it's not astronomical, and it's not hard to conceive that it would happen. I mean, I started thinking about this from a business perspective. First of all, your own vehicle. If you go out and buy a brand new internal combustion engine car that has, I guess, a 20-year life on it probably, the reality is I'm telling you that by 2030, half the cars being sold will be electric. People are going to look at you driving an internal combustion engine car and ask you how long you want to be a dinosaur. You know, why are you polluting the environment? They're going to give you nasty looks, and they're going to think you're a, you know, Neanderthal, and you're just a slow thinker. So what happens is, are you going to be, you buy that car today, 2022, and in 8 years, that car is still a very good car. I mean, it's certainly capable, probably would do everything you ever wanted it to do. But the reality is that it's not going to have much value. There's going to be a lot of used internal combustion cars on the market, many more than people want to buy, and you won't be able to get anything for it. So when you're buying your own personal car, you better be thinking about this. Yeah, even more, thinking about your business. Heck, if you've got some business, like think about trash trucks. It, you know, trash trucks never drive more than 30 miles a day. They got, you know, somebody picks it up, they go for the drive, they pick up the material, then they go to the dump, they dump it out, and they go put it away again. That's a perfect application for an electric vehicle, right? You take an electric truck, you build the truck, you put the trash, the compactor on the back of it, and then you send it out, and then you have fleet charging, and the fleet charging station has solar panels on the roof and all over, so you so that the operator's making their own electricity. And now think what that does for the fleet, right? So you start seeing this change out in box trucks. You know, think of the box trucks that are used in delivery all over Tucson, Phoenix, Oklahoma City, Wichita, Chicago, and New York, right? There's literally hundreds of thousands of these vehicles that never go more than 100 miles a day, right? Heavy operating trucks. And so that's why we can start sitting here saying, wait a minute, there's so many more opportunities.
There's a lot of opportunities. And every business owner needs to sit down and really think about, take their blinders off and really think about how the electrification of vehicles is going to impact their business. Like you said, it could be a delivery service. It could be something, you know, even if you have supply chain as part of what you do, you're going to be in your business interfacing with electric vehicles, right? So the warehouses probably have to have charging stations built in as they load up the trucks.
I had the opportunity in early December. I was doing a workshop, and there was a representative for a company out of Minnesota called Quick Trip. They spelled it K-W-I-K. And they have a number of gas stations across, I know, Wisconsin. I'm not sure exactly how big their area is. But they perceived this already. And what they started doing was they took advantage of the fact that they had a very large sales volume of prepared foods. People came into the Quick Trip to get, I guess, sausage, biscuits, hot dogs, various kinds of prepared foods. And they had been expanding this prepared foods business that they had. And then they started saying, wait a minute, why couldn't we compete with the at-home delivery people? And we could grow the prepared foods business. People could come into the Quick Trip and they could pick up a dinner and take the dinner back home with them. And so they've already started the process of thinking through how to convert these thousands of sites that are currently gas station convenience stores into sites that will be supporting the home prepared foods for home consumption. Now, I haven't seen their business model, but I can at least say they're looking at the transition. Yeah. And they're being thoughtful about the fact that they're going to have to change. They're going to have to find another revenue opportunity besides gasoline and diesel fuel. And I really congratulate them for thinking about that in 2021, 2022, and not waiting until we get into that punctuated equilibrium and it's the, oh my gosh, territory, what am I going to do now?
Yeah. How many businesses do you think are in that modality now of they're not even thinking about anything with this? And, you know, next podcast, we'll talk a little bit about more on the environmental and, you know, governance side, but certainly the way that we spend our money right now is dictated by, you know, these trends that are in occurrence and growing, and it's not going to change as we look forward. It's just going to continue.
Right. So let's take another example, backup power. A lot of people today think a lot about backup power because they, you know, look at the storms that hit the Midwest and the upper Midwest and the terrible tornadoes we had at the holiday season this last year. You know, power is something that can be knocked out fairly easily. There's big snows in the Sierras this holiday season. People went without power for a full week in the high Sierras of California and Nevada. So historically, that backup power system has been an internal combustion engine that is powered by either natural gas, propane, or some kind of liquid fuel, typically kerosene or gasoline, right? So you have this internal combustion engine that's driving the electric generator. And, you know, there's a lot of popular brands out there, General Electric, Kohler, and Generac come to mind, that have made these products. And the whole home, you know, backup power. The reality is, if you buy one of those today, it's probably going to be hard to, you know, make sure that it's an effective product in 2030. Because where's the development going? Well, it's going into solar panels and batteries, with the idea that we should be installing battery walls in our houses as the backup power supply. Put solar panels on the roof, so if the power goes out, you've got a charged up set of batteries that are ready to rock and roll. And you've got some solar panels that you can monitor the production rate. And then you can keep track of, you know, am I making enough electricity, or do I need to cut back on my consumption while the power's out? Now, that's where all the investment's going today. That's where the development dollars are being put. So if you're sitting in your house and you're saying, you know, I should be thinking about this. I'm concerned about climate change. I'm concerned about these wild weather patterns. I think maybe I need a backup power supply. Then, you know, before you reach for that internal combustion engine format, I would encourage you to think about this and really put the, you know, put some thought into, is that the right direction to go, or should I be putting in some power walls, and there's more than one manufacturer of those, and some solar panels.
Yeah, I'm doing some work. You know, both Adam and I, we do our consulting on the side and other things, and certainly there's a company I'm working with now that is deploying, or will be deploying, a battery, basically. It's an energy storage device. And so there's a whole host of these things that are out there. One of those I worked with a number of years ago called RedFlow. It's basically it's a zinc flow battery. And it works. It's about the size of two refrigerators side by side. And basically, it stores the electricity in an electrolyte fluid. And basically, it works almost like a plating process. So you electrify these plates, and it attracts the zinc in the solution. And then when you basically need the power, you reverse the process. And the zinc peeling off of these plates is what creates the electricity. Well, there's been this whole renaissance. It's actually been worked on for many, many years, like 30 years, and it really hasn't taken off. And what's interesting is it's a lot about timing. So I would predict that in the next 18 to 24 months, we're going to see these things deployed in a lot greater speed and more prolific. So certainly there's things that are being out there that are just haven't hit the market, that would replace and compete with these internal combustion generators and such. You couple one of these energy storage devices with solar, and you've got what you need to weather any of these storms.
Right. I mean, and all this fits into this. I'm doing it because I'm environmentally aware. You were talking about a zinc-based process and polarization of chemistry, and it reminded me, Manny, of that company that you and I visited back in October there in Phoenix, where they had, well, describe to the audience, you know, their process for dealing with chillers and water and chillers.
Sure. So if you can imagine, the Wild West was tamed in part by the fact that we have this miracle called air conditioning. and certainly air conditioning for your residents is one thing. There's a certain efficiency that they have. But when you look at things like hospitals, things like universities and big manufacturing plants, they use something,
office buildings.
I mean, anything that's bigger than just your house, apartment buildings, can use a chilled water system, where they basically have a central plant that chills this glycol, this water mixture, and they pump it around to all these different rooms, and then you have what looks kind of like a radiator on your wall that blows out the cold air. So long story short, this whole process requires lots of water. You take the water and you evaporate it in that process. It removes the heat from the system, and voila, you've got chilled water and chilled air. So the problem with that process is that because you're evaporating the water, you have a constant flow of water, number one. And number two, the water itself, especially like in here in Tucson and Phoenix area, is very hard. You have a lot of minerals in the water. So all these minerals form on the side of these chillers, and you've got to use these very expensive, very costly chemicals to make sure that you're not clogging up all your system. So this company in Phoenix called Dynamic Water has a pretty amazing technology where they're able to, in essence, have almost like a cathodic system that absorbs the the material, if you will, in kind of an electric way. They electrically charge these plates, and they remove all the calcium and all the other stuff before it enters the system. So a technology like that, that company is, they've been around for a while, but they're going to experience some tremendous growth as areas that are looking at and being very wary of their water usage are going to not only want to use these, but mandate these, right? I know in California, Adam, you're in a situation where the water and the water, the whole water conversation is loud and very fervent, correct?
Yeah. And so what I think the point about this is for people to understand, this is where the development is happening. People are thinking around environmental awareness, and they're thinking around how do I use less water and how can I use electricity and electrical processes, magnetism, and these basic physics applied through electricity in order to help us get more successful with our lives. And that's going to improve batteries. And we were headed down the road of battery improvement, making sure that you can drive further, getting more efficient in terms of making the electricity and storing the electricity. And all that's where the development is going. And that's what I'm trying to say is that our audience out there needs to be aware that, well, that you may not be thinking I need to go buy an electric car today. And you might not even buy my story, and you might be willing to go put your money into another internal combustion engine car. You really need to stop and think about this, because the development is going in that direction. That's where the big dollars are. Let me give you another example. We did not pass the Build Back Better plan in 2021, but we know that's going to be broken up into some smaller things, and pieces of that will be passed in 2022. One of the pieces that's almost certain to get passed is the one around charging stations. And that's effectively grant money that's being put up by the federal government in order to get 500,000 public charging stations built. Now, there's three kinds of charging stations. There's 110, there's 240, and then there's DC fast charge, or DCFC as it's called. That's the one people want, the DCFC, because that's where you plug your car in and you charge it up in 30 minutes, right? It doesn't take all night. And so there's going to be 500,000 of those they want to build. Again, add it up, you do the numbers, 18%, it's not that big of a rate. But the interesting thing is that DCFC stations are kind of like gas stations, right? You pick a location, you can have more than one station there. And you can have more than one port, the wire that comes off to plug into the vehicles. It doesn't have to just be one. So that's now going to be this giant business. And if you run the numbers in terms of the subsidies that are being probably going to go out, right? I mean, the ones that were in the last bill, it indicates that the cost, 50% of the cost of the charging stations will be covered from grants by the federal government. Now, if you're an entrepreneur and you're looking for a business opportunity, let's think about this. I mean, if you live in Rhode Island or if you live in South Dakota, there are states that don't have very many charging stations. You can put a business together to go find locations, maybe old gas stations that are shut down, right-of-ways that nobody's using anymore. You install a charging station. You could have, you get to location. You could start with one charging station, eventually expand it to more. Each charging station could be more powerful. And so you could start off with two lines per charging station, grow that to four or six. And you could end up with somewhere 60 cars could park and charge up at the same time. And maybe you'd sell them a sandwich while they're there, right? That's what's going to replace the old gas station convenience stores. And that's going to be a whole new business opportunity. So now, okay, how are you getting in on that? And then don't just think about the cars and the charging stations. Just think of the millions of components we're talking about now, the millions of relays and PC boards and electrical connectors that are going to have to be built. I mean, every time somebody's moving those wires around, there's ends on them, they click into the car, those are plastic parts. Mm-hmm. There's things that break. They're going to have to be installed once and then replaced on a regular basis as part of maintenance. These are huge opportunities that are coming down the road. I use the analogy, it's like the Concorde. It's on the ground and then it almost stands up straight as it takes off. And that's the kind of disruptive change we're going to see very soon because of electrification of the auto fleet. So again, it comes back to you're making decisions today around your vehicles, your fleets, the businesses you're in. And you should say, wait a minute, this is going to happen. We're going to have an electric car fleet out there by 2030. That's where the development's going. What is it going to do to my business? What opportunities do I have to get in early? I like the little ad where Domino's has an ad where it has a little autonomous vehicle that apparently goes down the sidewalk and delivers pizza to people. I've never seen it yet in life. I've only seen it in the advertising. But that's thinking ahead. It's starting to say, wait a minute, do I have enough concentration of demand that I can have this autonomous vehicle on the sidewalk that can do deliveries? And then think about that. How does that apply to your business if you're a dry cleaner or if you're a druggist, you know, if pharmacist?
If you follow our social media, I posted a picture, actually a short video, of one of these little robots going down the street in Tempe there at Arizona State about 6 months ago. It was in the novelty, right? I was just standing there and I see this little robot crossing the road and I thought to myself, what is that? And so right now it's a novelty, but guess what? It's becoming more and more mainstream. Just a few months ago, I did another short video. I was in a Walmart buying a few things and there was a fully autonomous robotic cleaner that mopping up the floor, you know, like a Zamboni, but with no person on it, just cruising around. And if somebody walked in front of it, it stopped and it waited for them to pass. And then it kept on going. And so it was so ubiquitous. It just felt like it belonged there. So if you imagine 5 years ago, that would have been unheard of. And now it's becoming more and more mainstream.
Yeah. Well, I know all of us have been in those situations when we're in a dense urban environment, you know, Los Angeles, Chicago, New York, Phoenix, where you're in the car and you're trying to get around and you see people walking on the sidewalk and they're going as fast as you are. Right. They make three blocks in the same period of time you make three blocks. And you just get so frustrated watching it. And that's where electric scooters and electric bikes come in. Right. We're going to see a future where, you know, when the weather's not inclement, you can drive your vehicle somewhere, not just get close to where you want to go and then park in less costly location. Then you take one of these electric vehicles, you plop $2 into the machine, you take it, you drive to the location you want on a scooter or electric bike, you get off, put it back into the rack, go inside, right? And now you haven't had to deal with all that intense urban traffic. You haven't had to, find the parking in the urban area that costs more. You know, it changes the dynamic. And so these are opportunities for entrepreneurs today, but they also are opportunities and changes that will affect all of us, right? And we need to start really thinking about, you know, these changes. You know, again, if I was one of the few people that had a small grocery store, I'd be thinking about putting a charging station in the parking lot of the grocery store. Absolutely. And it's one way you can try to compete against the Krogers of the world and all of those, you know, brands they own, like Smith's and Subway's, et cetera, is, you know, give the customer something more to come to your store and get ahead of the curve. Right. Be one of the first ones there.
Yeah.
I don't think having charging stations in a grocery store parking lot is going to be a long term competitive advantage. But, you know, it might be good enough for 2 or 3 years to give you a little bit of breathing room to continue to think of other ways that you can get ahead of the competition.
Precisely. And this is a really good segue to talk about our courses. We have the Think Innovation course, which is our masterclass on business growth. It gets you in the right mindset to really start thinking about how to shift your business in that direction of emerging trends. And like I mentioned last time at our podcast, for the next a couple more weeks here, we're offering a substantial discount down to $497. So give us an email and we'll give you the promo code. And then the other course is called Unlock Growth. And this really helps you to reframe your thinking in. If you've got an existing business and you're struggling to grow and you're wondering why you're not having that growth you did in the very beginning of your business, this is the right, it's a mini course. It's only $100 and it gives you that basically all the tools you need to really take your business to that next level. So with that, Adam, any final thoughts?
Well, people really need to jump into 2022, you know, and get their feet wet. It's time to move. It's time to take action. I mean, I'm tired of hearing people say that COVID is slowing them down or the government's slowing them down or blaming everything around them instead of getting out there and realizing, hey, these are trends. The trends are hitting us full in the face, and it's time to get out there and make something happen. And if you don't have a planning tool that does that for you, then here are two. And for $500, you get a complete course set, you know, there's a 20 plus modules that'll walk you through looking at these trends, walk you through applying them to your business, figuring out what you can do today and what you can do long term. I mean, for $500, where else can you get that kind of value?
Yeah, it's remarkable. And it's very true. And if you don't have your eyes open to what's happening in the world with trends, you're going to be like Rip Van Winkle here and wake up to a world that's changed all around you, and you're going to be the one stuck in the dinosaur age.
Yep. So let's get moving, people. Let's make 2022 the year of great success. Thanks a lot, Absolutely. Manny.
Thank you very much, Adam. Take care.